Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges and I'll be with you over the next half hour. Coming up on today's program, more than meets the eye, we bring you our weekly reflection on the Sunday Gospel reading prepared by Jill Bevilacqua. And Joan Knows, our resident Vatican watcher Joan Lewis, takes us back over the past week's events in the Vatican. As usual, we begin today's broadcast with Jill Bevilacqua's programme, There's More in the Sunday Gospel Than Meets the Eye, with readings by Sean Patrick Lovett.
Jesus said, Truly I assure you, whoever does not enter the sheepfold through the gate, but climbs in some other way, is a thief and a marauder. The one who enters through the gate is shepherd of the sheep. The keeper opens the gate for him. The sheep hear his voice as he calls his own by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all those that are his, he walks in front of them, and the sheep follow him because they recognize his voice. They will not follow a stranger. Such a one they will flee because they do not recognize a stranger's voice. Even though Jesus used this figure with them, they did not grasp what he was trying to tell them. He therefore said to them again, My solemn word is this, I am the sheep gate. All who come before me were thieves and marauders, whom the sheep did not heed. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be safe. He will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and slaughter and destroy. I came that they might have life and have it to the full.
There's probably no image in the Gospels more beloved than that of the Good Shepherd. Innumerable are the artists who have represented him. Innumerable the occasions when one or other of the musical versions of David's psalm have been played and sung for church occasions, particularly funerals. Oh, not the 23rd psalm, please, sighed one parish priest in exasperation. Understandably, but he could not refuse. There's something inherently comforting in the biblical image. And though the readings are different for the three-year cycle, the Gospels for the fourth Sunday of Easter are all taken from the same chapter of John, and the day is generally known as Good Shepherd Sunday. The idea of God as the Shepherd of Israel appears constantly in the Old Testament, writes a modern commentator. But, he goes on, it was never worked out so fully as here. For those listening to our Lord, the reference to sheep and shepherds were very familiar. But even for a 20th century traveller in the Holy Land, it would not have been surprising. H.V. Morton was there in the 1930s.
On the roads of Palestine and on the hills, you see the Good Shepherd. He comes along at the head of his flock, generally carrying over his shoulders a lamb or an injured sheep. No animal mentioned in the Bible can compare in symbolical interest with the sheep. I believe it's mentioned over 500 times. As you cannot go very far along the roads in Palestine without encountering the figure who, staff in hand, symbolizes the love and compassion of Jesus Christ.
The Greek word aule, or enclosure, originally meant the vestibule or porch of a temple. In the agricultural world, it means the space defined by a dry stone wall covered with thorns or branches. In our Lord's time, this enclosure was common to the whole village. At night, the various shepherds would bring their flocks to the fold, which was guarded by a custodian or keeper. At dawn, the shepherds returned, and the keeper opened the gate for each one, whom he knew, as also the sheep, who, as the Gospel says, hear his voice as he calls his own by name and leads them out. This is another detail which might be foreign to us. As the Gospel has it, when he has brought out all that are his, he walks in front of them, and the sheep follow him because they recognise his voice. H.V. Morton commented on this pastoral custom and the rapport between the shepherd and his flock.
He never drives them as our own shepherds drive their sheep. He always walks at their head, leading them along the roads and over the hills to new pastures. Our principle of droving is something that neither Arab shepherds nor their sheepdogs understand. It's all done by word of mouth, and the sheep follow their shepherds like dogs. The Arab sheepdog is used, therefore, not to drive sheep, but to protect them against thieves and wild animals.
Not for these sheep, then, the tragic destiny of the newborn lamb in this poem by Ian Sorelia entitled The Fox.
First lambs have come, late snowfall to the hill. All day he watches, feeding on greed till stars in the April sky, he steals shadowy down the valley side. Furtive wades marsh myrtle, and by screen of heather comes where flocks graze. Trembling for quarry, he scans each plucking lamb, chooses, pauses strong as a spell, then flashes to revelry. The lambless ewe sputters down the slope, home over bristly ridge, in one sweep he covers the gliders, then deviously to his deep mountain den, safe down crevice drop, where no terrier dares. On his morning round, death in wool embers is the shepherd's find.
Another peculiarity of the Palestine shepherd was noted by H.V. Morton, and that was the way he communicated with his animals.
As he goes, he sometimes talks to them in a loud sing-song voice, using a weird language unlike anything I've ever heard in my life. I was on the hills at the back of Jericho. It was uncanny because there was nothing human about it. The words were animal sounds arranged in a kind of order. No sooner had he spoken than an answering bleat shivered over the herd.
Whenever I think of an Old Testament prophet, the image that presents itself is invariably that of a wild-looking, primitive creature, bearded, emaciated, and generally rather daunting. As for Ezekiel, even his name sounds gaunt, and with his valley of dry bones, well, and yet in a rather splendid book I have with brilliant modern illustrations, there he is, bearded, yes, with thick eyebrows and great dark eyes and skin that looks like parchment. But what is he holding under his blue cloak? A lamb, no less. For there, among the exiles in Babylon, on the banks of the river Chebar, God spoke to Ezekiel and ordered him to prophesy against the shepherds of Israel who have neglected their flocks.
Shepherds, the Lord Yahweh says this, shepherds ought to feed their flock, yet you have fed on milk. You have dressed yourselves in wool, you have sacrificed the fattest sheep, but failed to feed the flock. You have failed to make weak sheep strong, or to care for the sick ones, or bandage the wounded ones, bring back strays, or look for the lost. For lack of a shepherd they have scattered to become the prey of any wild animal. My flock is straying this way and that, on mountains and on high hills, scattered all over the country. No one bothers about them and no one looks for them. Well then, shepherds, hear the word of Yahweh. Since my shepherds have stopped bothering about my flock, since my shepherds feed themselves rather than my flock, I am going to take my flock back from them. I am going to look after my flock myself and keep all of it in view, as a shepherd keeps all his flock in view when he stands up in the middle of his scattered sheep, so shall I keep my sheep in view. I shall rescue them from wherever they have been scattered during the mist and darkness. I shall feed them in good pasturage. I myself will pasture my sheep. I myself will show them where to rest. It is the Lord Yahweh who speaks. I shall look for the lost one, bring back the stray, bandage the wounded, and make the weak strong. I shall watch over the fat and healthy. I shall be a true shepherd to them.
And so it is Ezekiel who announces the promise of the Good Shepherd, whom God will send to Israel. And it is this prophecy, writes a modern scholar, which seems to dominate our Lord's thought in this parable. Not only does Jesus tell his listeners that he is the Good Shepherd, but he is also the gate of the sheepfold. In biblical tradition, we're told, the gate symbolized access to heavenly realities. When Jacob woke from his dream of the ladder between earth and heaven, he declared, "Surely the Lord is in this place. This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven." These words of Jacob are used in the liturgy of the dedication of a church, while Ezekiel's prophecy is linked to the Jewish feast of Hanukkah, Festival of Lights, which commemorates the rededication of the temple after its profanation by the Syrians. Probably more familiar to most of us than Ezekiel is Isaiah and his prophecy of the Messiah.
He shall feed his flock like a shepherd. He shall gather the lambs with his arm and carry them in his bosom, and shall gently lead those that are with young.
In the very last chapter of John's Gospel, Jesus passes on to Peter the charge of his flock when he says to him, "Feed my lambs and feed my sheep." Pope John the 23rd was especially conscious of this charge given to every pope.
The task of shepherd of the whole flock is very dear to my heart. Other human qualities, knowledge, diplomatic tact, organizational gifts, may embellish and add to pontifical government, but they can in no way substitute it. The shepherd's way, the pastor's way, is this: to count his sheep one by one.
And to close, let's listen to part of this atmospheric poem by Rose Macaulay, entitled simply, Driving Sheep.
The green east flows with the tides of the rose between the bars of night, half drawn. The moon shines cold and faint on the fold where sheep glimmer, grey in the dawn. All thin like a dream their sad cries seem, caught high above time and space, and old as the world, from out fleece dew-pearled, gazes each meek sheep face. Dazed with sleep and numb, the sheep women come and open the field gate wide. The sheep surge out in an idiot rout, like grey foam swept on a tide, Keep steady, move slow. We've 3 miles to go to Grantchester from Chalkfield Pen. Herd them up all the way, lest some go astray of our imbecile 70. Unreasoning, blind, each poor unhinged mind takes its thought from the sheep next ahead. Through each hedge gate, if you reach it too late, they charge, wild and pale, like the dead. Their lilting bleat, their sharp, scuttling feet are strange, strange as dreams before day, and counting the sheep, we sway into sleep and trail along, foolish as they.
And thanks there to Jill Bevilacqua for that programme. And now, our friend and Vatican watcher Joan Lewis, who's EWTN's Rome Bureau Chief, gives us a roundup of the past week's events here in the Vatican.
OK, so here we are once again, sitting here. Let's start, as ever, Joan, with Sunday.
Well, Sunday was one amazing day in St. Peter's Square. I mean, St. Peter's Square and Via della Conciliazione practically filled to overflowing with 100,000 members of the Italian lay apostolate, Italian Catholic Action. And they were in the square for 3 hours, celebrating with Pope Francis the 150th anniversary of that organization. And in his remarks, of course, the Pope recalled the heritage, the legacy of the apostolate, while challenging its members not to rest on their laurels. He said, I encourage you to continue to be a people, a missionary people who live and bear witness to the joy of knowing that the Lord loves us with infinite love, and together with him deeply love the story that we are part of. The Pope emphasized, he mentioned this several times, he emphasized the importance of the parish. And he said, today also you're called to follow your particular vocation, putting yourselves at the service of the dioceses, around the bishop, etc., where the church abides with the people. And again, he said, I invite you to continue your apostolic experience rooted in the parish, which is not an outdated institution. Do you understand, the Pope said? He said, it is the presence of the church in a given territory. The Pope naturally at noon prayed the Regina Caeli, which we always have in place of the Angelus in the Easter season. And he appealed for an end in violence to Venezuela. This is the country he has said often that he loves, and he loves the people. And he's asked them to respect human rights, where nearly 30 people have been killed. Those people were killed in the month of April. And he said, I make a heartfelt appeal to the government and all components of Venezuelan society to avoid any more forms of violence, to respect human rights, and to seek a negotiated conclusion. And of course, he decried the grave humanitarian, social, political, and economic crisis that is exhausting the population. And that's so true. It just exhausts those of us who have been reading about it for months, much less living through it. So,
indeed.
A busy Sunday morning, a full Sunday morning for Pope Francis.
Okay, let's move to May Day, or Labor Day, which of course is a public holiday here in Italy.
In Italy, throughout a great part of the world, certainly all of Europe. So
yes.
It was a 3-day weekend for many, many people who have Saturday, Sunday, and then Monday off, the Feast of St. Joseph the Worker. We certainly have to remember that. In fact, the Pope tweeted on Monday, may St. Joseph give young people the ability to dream, to take risks for big tasks, the things that God dreams for us. And of course, he noted that so many young people are faced with unprecedented high rates of unemployment and socio-financial difficulties. And then on that same day and same theme of labor, the Holy Father sent a message to the Pontifical Academy of Sciences as it meets in its plenary assembly. He recalled the hard battles of workers during the 19th and 20th centuries and said, really, they are far from over. And he pointed to the social exclusion and marginalization of millions of men and women today. Even though those battles of which he spoke took place in the name of solidarity, he said, today, solidarity is not sufficient. it's necessary to increase the parameters of the traditional concept of justice. And then he said, in a current liberal and individualistic vision of the world, almost everything has become a trade commodity. I think a lot of us call something like that the bottom line. It's always about money. He said, in a state-centric vision, everything is accomplished out of duty. Two visions that will not and have not solved the grave problems of economy and work. So he said it's necessary to attempt new paths that are inspired by Christ's message, and above all, of course, to do so with fraternities.
Okay, and then Tuesday was a quiet day for the Holy Father, but let's go on to Wednesday and the general audience.
Exactly. And Tuesday is generally dedicated to preparing for that audience. And as is traditional on the Wednesday general audience day following a papal trip, the Holy Father always does speak of that trip, giving a brief summary of the people he met, the places he went to, and the events that he celebrated. So obviously he was talking about Egypt, the four people who invited him there, the president, the Coptic Orthodox Patriarch, the Grand Imam of Al-Aqsar, and the Catholic Coptic Patriarchate. The Holy Father described his meeting with the Grand Imam and his message. He was there, of course, for the International Conference for Peace. And he said his meeting with the Grand Imam recalled that peace is the fruit of an education to wisdom and a humanism that respects the religious dimension of our existence. He said our covenant with God, grounded in the commandment of love of God and neighbor, inspires our efforts to build a just and peaceful civil order in which we all have a part to play. Then, of course, the Pope highlighted Egypt's great cultural and religious heritage, which gives the nation a special role in peacemaking. Naturally, Francis referred to his meeting with Coptic Orthodox Patriarch Pope Tewodros II, in which they reaffirmed their mutual commitment to unity. And he said, we also prayed for the victims of the recent attacks at two churches on Palm Sunday. Exactly. And then the Pope said, of course, at Mass with the Catholic community and my meeting with priests, religious, and seminarians, I saw the beauty of the church in Egypt, and I encouraged everyone to persevere in the hope of the gospel. Then he mentioned the Holy Family, and I always love this reference. He said, may the Holy Family, who once found refuge in Egypt, bless and protect its people with prosperity, fraternity, and peace. And it just kind of really boggles the mind. You think, Holy Family, 2,000 years ago, they were refugees. They had to leave their own country. So that was the Wednesday audience, and then we move to Thursday, where there's a number of events and pieces of news that marked the day. The Holy Father on Thursday did meet with Cardinal Amato, who's the prefect of the Congregation for the Causes of Saints, and he authorized quite a number of decrees for beatification and canonization, including a miracle attributed to the intercession of venerable servant of God, Francis Solanus Casey. Now, he's a Friars Minor Capuchin, very, very well known in the United States. He died in 1957. And then the Pope recognized the heroic virtues of someone that I think both you and I may have met or certainly written about, and that was Cardinal Francis Xavier Nguyen Van Thuan, who died in September of 2002.
Okay. He served at the Vatican, but he was famous for the book that he wrote when he was in prisons for many years by the communist regime in Vietnam.
Exactly. No, it was wonderful years. And it's amazing. He was born into a family with a long Catholic tradition, Cardinal Van Thuan, including relatives, this is fascinating, who are among martyrs since 1698. So from an early age, owing much to the his exemplary mother, Elizabeth, he was brought up in a Catholic environment with a deep faith, and certainly it was this that had to have gotten him through those years that he spent in prison. So that was a big announcement, big piece of news on Thursday, the announcement of future blesseds and saints. And
he also had an interesting meeting of Aung San Suu Kyi.
Yes, exactly. She's the state counselor and union minister for foreign affairs of the Republic of the Union of Myanmar. Many of our listeners might have known its name once was Burma. If you grew up in a certain period of history, that's the name you'd recognize. And not only did he meet with her, and of course she was in prison for many, many years and house imprisonment in her country, but the Vatican announced at the same time that the Holy See and the Republic of the Union of Myanmar keen to promote bonds of mutual friendship, have jointly agreed to establish diplomatic relations at the level of apostolic nunciature for the Holy See, an embassy on the part of the Republic of Myanmar. Now, there, however, was no statement about the nature or content of the meeting between the Holy Father and Aung San Suu Kyi. Another announcement was made Thursday, and that was that U.S. President Donald Trump, as he comes to Italy to attend a big economic summit, he will meet with the Pope on May 24th. And that was announced late afternoon at the Vatican on Thursday. But the highlight of the day for so many people was the Holy Father's meeting with representatives of the Secretariat for Communications.
Yes, especially for people like myself who work at Vatican Radio.
Exactly. Now, the Secretariat was meeting in its first plenary assembly, and the Pope told them, we know he's been aiming to reform many, many offices of the Roman Curia. The Pope, speaking of that reform, he said, reform is not to just whitewash things. It's to give them a different form and organization. And he urged members of the Vatican media platform, so the paper, the television, the radio, etc., he urged them not to be afraid of reform and to embrace the challenge of change that will enable them to bring the message of the gospel to all. He said, reform must be done with intelligence and what the Pope called a good kind of violence. I'm afraid I can't explain that. I'm not sure what a good kind of violence is, unless he was referring to a bigger, broader reform.
Well, that remark was a little bit puzzling, I think, for many people.
It was, and he did not go on to further explain it. Some of the issues addressed during the plenary, he said, were very dear to his heart, and he said, the Secretariat is working to find new criteria and new ways of communicating the gospel of mercy to all peoples and cultures, making use of the new digital culture at our disposal. And then in particular, the Holy Father mentioned, he did say the reform is not about coordinating or merging various platforms, but setting up something completely new with a single and unified management, which will be better able to respond to the needs of the church's mission. And I think that's probably the part of the statement that is most being examined by Vatican media people today. So what is a single unified management? And then the Holy Father did turn to two of the media families. He said the Vatican newspaper is called to find a new and different way to reach a much higher number of readers than it does through its printed format. And then in a reference to Vatican Radio, he said, it has become an ensemble of portals and must be reshaped according to new models so it can conform to modern technologies and to the needs of our contemporaries. Then the Holy Father ended his talk to the Secretariat for Communications with these words, let us resist the temptation of being attached to a glorious past. Let's all be team players in order to better respond to the new communication challenges posed by culture today without fear and without foreseeing apocalyptic scenarios.
Well, thank you very much, Joan, and speak to you again next week. And I was talking there to Vatican watcher Joan Lewis, who's EWTN's Rome Bureau Chief. And that's all we have time for today. Thanks so much for joining us here on Vatican Radio. I'm Susie Hodges, and until next time, Laudator Jesus Christus.